Speech in the name of one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Please be seated. Today is the story of the Transfiguration. And if that story sounds familiar to you, it's because you heard it in August, and before that in January, and before that in August, and before that in January. And if you love this story, fear not, you're going to hear it again in August. In fact, the story of the Transfiguration is the most commonly repeated story in the entire lectionary. We read it more often than we read the story of Palm Sunday, of Maundy Thursday, of Good Friday, of Jesus' death, of his resurrection, and of the Christmas story of Jesus' birth. We read all of those stories once a year. And yet, every single year, we read the story of the Transfiguration twice. It always appears on the last Sunday in the season of Epiphany, today, which is why we heard it today. And then it always happens again on August 6th, which is the feast day for the Transfiguration. The Feast of the Transfiguration is a principal feast. It is transferred to the closest Sunday. It is much like All Saints, where All Saints falls on November 1st every year, but you transfer it to the closest Sunday. So you hear the story of the Transfigurations two times every single year. Meaning that the people at St. Stephen's have heard me preach 8 sermons on the Transfiguration in the four years that I've been there. You guys have heard it 6 times. And I have to be honest with you guys, I'm running out of things to tell you. When you preach on it twice a year, every time it appears to come back up, I think, not again, I just preached on the Transfiguration. And yet here it is. And in about 5 months from now, we're going to hear it again in August. So the story of the Transfiguration appears in all 3 synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And they all have pretty much the exact same detail. Jesus and a few of his select disciples go up onto the mountain. Jesus is transfigured along with Moses and Elijah. They appear in sparkling white clothes that are so white and so blinding that no one on earth could have bleached them. And then Peter is always the one to speak, and he always says, "Rabbi, it's good that we were here. Let us make you 3 dwellings." And as soon as Peter speaks, the Transfiguration ends. And there is a cloud that comes and descends upon Jesus and says, "This is my son, my beloved." And then they descend down the mountain, and Jesus orders them not to tell anyone until after he is risen from the dead. And there are a couple things about this reading that is important and probably why we hear it twice. And the first is that the story of the Transfiguration is really a part of a story of our life. Jesus takes upon some of his friends up to the top of this mountain, and they have a beautiful mountaintop experience, both literally and figuratively. They have a great mountaintop experience. And then they have to descend, they come back down off the mountain, they physically walk down the mountain, and they end kind of in the valley. And all 3 gospels place this at the exact same stage in Jesus' life. You have Mark, who wrote the reading that we heard today. And Mark, when he wrote his gospel, Mark almost kind of word vomited out the story of Jesus' life. We're told that Mark did not seem to care what happened and when, he just wanted you to get the stories. So Mark doesn't take a lot of time or energy trying to create a timeline of Jesus' life. He wants to tell you what miracles Jesus did and how they happened, not what happened in which order. The other gospel writers try to create a narrative and a timeline of what Jesus did and when. Well, you'll hear things like, first Jesus did this, and then he did this, and next was this. Mark doesn't seem to care about what happens. But all 3 of the gospels that have the Transfiguration, the synoptic gospels, place the Transfiguration at the exact same point in Jesus' life, which is towards the end of it. They all place it right towards the end of what Jesus is going to do in public ministry. So all 3 of them place it, and then Jesus goes up on the mountain, he's transfigured, he comes down the mountain, and then he stops. He sets his face, and he turns and goes to Jerusalem. And he turns and goes to Jerusalem, and when he arrives at Jerusalem, it is Palm Sunday. He comes into his triumphant entry, and we have the last week of Jesus' life, of Holy Week. All 3 gospel writers place this story happening at the exact same place. And we hear from our collect today, that prayer that we said right at the beginning, the collect of the day, says that before your passion, O Lord, you transfigured Jesus. Meaning that we're somewhat confident that the Transfiguration of Jesus happened near the end of his public ministry, right before he goes and sets his face to Jerusalem and eventually ends in Jerusalem with Palm Sunday, and then inevitably on Good Friday and then Easter Sunday. And there are a couple things about Mark's version that we get that we don't actually get in the others, which is rare, because Mark is the fastest narration of Jesus' life. He leaves out a lot of details that other writers put back in. But today we actually get the motivation for Peter speaking. Typically, we're told that Peter speaks. He says, Rabbi, it's good that we were here. Let's make three dwellings. But we don't know why Peter speaks. Why would Peter somewhat ruin the moment? And part of me feels for Peter because I think I would respond very similar to what Peter did. But today we're told why Peter speaks. He was terrified. He didn't know what to say, and he was terrified. So he probably said the first thing that popped into his mind. And as someone who that happens to, I feel for Peter in that moment because you don't know what to say. So he just says something. It's good that we're here. Let's make those three dwellings. And then, of course, in other narrations, Jesus rebukes him and the transfiguration ends there. Mark leaves out the rebuke. But then you have the dove descending on Jesus, cloud descending and saying, this is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. And part of the story of the transfiguration is that Jesus took the few disciples up on the mountain to give them something to hold on to for the coming weeks. Because what was going to happen, like I said, is Jesus is going to go into Holy Week. And his disciples need to be fortified for the road ahead of them. Because essentially what's going to happen is Monday, Thursday, they're going to have the institution of Holy Communion. You're going to have that last supper. Jesus is going to wash feet. He's going to go into the garden. He's going to pray, and he's going to be arrested. Friday morning, you're going to have the trial of Jesus ending throughout the night. Thursday night into Friday morning, you're going to have the trial of Jesus ending with the eventual crucifixion. And then you have the day of Holy Saturday, which as a church we like to jump over because Holy Week is incredibly busy. And there is actually a service in the Book of Common Prayer for Holy Saturday, not the Great Easter Vigil, just for Holy Saturday. And Holy Saturday is the day of nothingness. It is the day when trauma has already occurred. The trauma of Good Friday has already happened. Jesus has already been put to death. And Easter Vigil, the first service of Easter, has yet to occur. There is no resurrection. Right now, on Holy Saturday, you have a day of nothingness. You have people who have experienced great trauma and have not yet turned towards hope. And Jesus needs the people who are going to endure that. He needs his disciples to be fortified for that experience so that when Easter comes, they can actually go to the tomb and see that the tomb is empty and they can get ready for the experience that's to come in Easter. He needs them to be fortified. But the other part of this reading that I think is important is that Jesus also needed to be fortified. Jesus is going to go through Palm Sunday and Good Friday and Easter resurrection on his own as well. And he needs something to hold on to. And while we have the season of Epiphany always starts with the baptism of Jesus. We heard that story a couple weeks ago. But in reality, 3 years have passed for Jesus. The season of Epiphany is really short this year. The season of Epiphany, the length of it depends on the date of Easter. And the date of Easter, as you all know, is a rolling date depending on full moons and lots of factors. But the season of Epiphany this year is really short. We had 5 Sundays in the season of Epiphany, and the last Sunday in the season of Epiphany, for a total of 6 Sundays in the season of Epiphany. But when Epiphany is a long season, the season of Epiphany can actually be 8 Sundays in the season of Epiphany, plus the last Sunday in the season of Epiphany, for a total of 9 Sundays in the season of Epiphany. So this one was 3 weeks shorter than the longest season of Epiphany can be. So we have a condensed version of Epiphany. So it really feels to us like Jesus was just baptized. He just heard God say, this is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. But in reality, Jesus hears that at the very beginning of his ministry and then nothing for 3 straight years. And then he hears it here at the end of his public ministry, right before his crucifixion, right before he goes to Jerusalem. So I think part of what happens here in the story is both the disciples and Jesus need something to hold on to for the coming season ahead. And what's really struck me this time about why this comes here at the season, the last Sunday in the season of Epiphany, is because we're about to enter the season of Lent. This story always comes exactly 3 days before the season of Lent. The last Sunday in Epiphany is always on a Sunday, it says so in its title, and the season of Lent always begins with Ash Wednesday, which is always on a Wednesday. So we have 3 days between the last Sunday of Epiphany and the first day in the season of Lent. And I think part of the reason this story sits here on the last day before we enter the season of Lent is so that we have something to hold on to. The season of Lent sometimes gets a bad rap in the church for being overly and unnecessarily hard. But the season of Lent is hard because what we're asked to do in the season of Lent, more than just giving things up, what we're actually asked to do is look at our lives, take a self-inventory of the things that we do in our lives, of the way that we treat each other, the way that we treat God, the way that we treat ourselves, and figure out where we can do it better and how we can reconcile ourselves to God. The places that we've pushed God away, how we can bring God back closer into our lives. But self-reflection is hard and it is painful. And the season of Lent is a season that gives us an opportunity to do that. And I think the story of the Transfiguration set here today for us is so that we can glean the parts of the story that are comforting to us. And maybe the part that's comforting to me is different than the part that's comforting to you, and that's okay. You can take the part of the story that is comforting to you and hold on to it for the next 40 days and 40 nights, technically not counting Sunday for anyone who's giving things up. Lent doesn't actually count Sundays. You can hold that for the season of Lent. But the bigger message of the Transfiguration is that whether we find ourselves on top of the mountain or coming down the mountain or in the deepest, lowest part of the valley or climbing back up the mountain, Jesus is always there. Because at the end of the Transfiguration, what happens is all of them, Jesus and the disciples, walk back down, literally walk back down the mountain. And Jesus and his disciples will walk back in to the darkest, deepest valley they will ever face. Jesus is alongside them for all of that. And we can trust that Jesus will be with us too. Amen.